Four Midwest Guys presents Origins of Justice, a four-part Four Midwest Guys miniseries. Part 4, Batman v Superman Reaction.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Four Midwest Guys Presents Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice Reactions, the last part of our four-part miniseries on Batman v Superman. With me today is Mr. Brian Akenbauer.
What's up?
What's going on, B? And my brother, Aaron.
Hey, how's it going, man?
And the Dirty Jay-Z.
Yeah, I got a reaction for you.
Yeah, I know. So, how's the show going to work? Well, we're going to break it down into the first part's going to be a non-spoiler review. So, for those of you who haven't seen the movie yet, you can just listen all the way up to the non-spoiler review part. Then we'll go into a spoiler section. And in that spoiler section, we're going to go over what worked and what didn't work, as well as was it true to characters. And then we're going to do some quick-fire questions before we finally get into our final thoughts and grades. So, let's get into the non-spoiler section, gentlemen, because there is a lot to cover here. Just real briefly, for those out there, we're going to just give your non-spoiler thoughts on what you thought the movie was. And John, I'll let you go first.
It was a mess. I mean, plain and simple, it was a mess from one scene to the next. Like, it's been a while since I've seen it, but all I remember from it is just thinking the dialogue was just so awful from, like, every scene. And it's just like, they ended weird, like they were structured weird, the characters did non-heroic stuff, they just kept doing stupid things that never really connected, they were just simply there to advance to the next plot point. It was just, I mean, I think because Warner Brothers and DC are trying to not copycat Marvel, like to try to build up to the Justice League movie, they just simply wrote it like they wrote it with a shotgun and just like shot at the script, and whatever stuck was what they came up with. And yeah, it's a mess. I mean, more or less, it's like watching somebody in poker bluffing and they have their terrible hand called, and in this case, that terrible hand is the script.
You know, I know exactly what you're talking about, but I think all of it, most of it, for me anyway, is the editing. I think there's a good movie in there. I think there's good themes, good ideas. It's just, it's all jumbled. And because it's jumbled and it's not in a good sequence of events, it's very hard to get yourself into a certain scene because the scenes change so quickly and without any transition in them. That was just my quick non-spoiler thought on it. Aaron, what was yours?
Yeah, I think my opinion's kind of similar. Like, the editing just kills the immersion in this film. And back to John's point, like, it feels like almost half the dialogue scenes, like, you're only getting, like, half what they're talking about. Like, there's scenes where Luther's talking to the senator where you're just, like, you don't know how it transitioned to that or how it kind of left off, and just the dialogue seems so out of place because of how it's cutting it. Like, before the movie came out, there was a story about them releasing, like, an R-rated extended cut, and at the time, I thought it was DC being reactionary to Deadpool, saying that, you know, they can be just as edgy sort of thing. And now, having watched it, I think the extended cut might be what they originally were going to put out, and it was just too long, or it got too dark, or something, and just Warner Brothers just cut it. Like, they just kind of cut it to make it, you know, a lot faster, because the movie's already, like, 2 hours and 45 minutes, and that was an additional 30 minutes on top of that. So, to be honest, I'm kind of thinking the R-rated extended cut's going to be the one that actually makes more sense. It's going to be, you know, a lot better. But even then, it's going to be a flawed movie with certain plot holes and a little heavy-handed dialogue. But I think it can be a lot better with the extended cut. And if you're kind of on the fence about seeing it, you might want to wait for that.
Okay. Brian, what's your non-spoiler take?
Although most people say it's choppy, which it is, don't get me wrong. For me, actually, it feels like I'm reading a comic with the way it jumps from scene to scene, you know, bringing everything along at its own pace, which kind of seems jumbled. But as you're watching, it kind of feels like everything's, you know, coming along to one final spot at the end. It almost feels like it's someone's interpretation of what a comic would be in real life. Aside from the cut scenes the like, transitions would have helped with that. Mm-hmm. But that was my take on it. But yeah, like for most people, I guess it felt like a jumbled mess.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So from this point forward, if you haven't seen the movie yet and you do not want to be spoiled, stop this podcast right here. Watch the movie and come back and listen to the rest of the podcast. So I'll give you 2 seconds. This tape will self-destruct. And 3, 2...
You still record on tape?
1. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because that's how we do our podcast, is on tapes.
Oh, I wonder if it takes so long.
And you count it down.
And yeah. I count it down. Okay, so from this point forward, you are now in the spoiler section. Warning, warning. Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Well, I'll spoil the shit out of this.
So, Jimmy Olsen dies in the beginning of the film. That's a thing.
If it was Jimmy Olsen,
no, they've confirmed
that. No, that was Jimmy.
Really? They really
confirmed that. They killed Jimmy Olsen.
He kind of looked like him, but I just...
Yeah, no. Snyder commented on it. They killed him right in the beginning scene.
I'm actually okay with that. I don't really like Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
But who will take the pictures?
Spider-Man.
There was that great crossover where Spider-Man replaced Peter Parker when Marvel and DC crossed over.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah. No one in this day and age has a cell phone that takes pictures. So.
There you go. You don't need
Superman Instagram.
I like it. I like it a lot. Okay, so for the first part of the spoiler section, we're going to do what we thought worked and what we didn't think worked. I'll go ahead and start this one off. Again, kind of like I said in the non-spoiler section, I think this thing had the best of intentions. I like the idea of the broken Batman, the older Batman, the Batman whose Robin has obviously been killed, even though they don't really say it in the movie. It's definitely implied by what you see.
Yeah, it could be something they're kind of alluding towards in like the Batman solo film.
Yeah.
Someone actually like said it's an actual frame from one of the comics.
It is.
They've reproduced.
We know Zack Snyder. He does that. Yeah. That's essentially his directing style.
It works for certain scenes. Like, I thought in Watchmen it did fine in certain spots.
But I thought that scene was really cool with the ha-ha Batman jokes with you. But if there's one thing I really loved from Batman v Superman, it was the theme of the broken Batman and how much Batman has changed and how much harder and more gritty he is and, disgruntled and holding a grudge. And it actually kind of takes Superman to kind of bring him back, or at least, you know, at least that's what they were going for. What didn't work for me was the editing. You just couldn't become emotionally attached to any scene just because of the editing. It was too jumbled for me.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of scenes where even like the first action scene where you're seeing like Batman chase down like the piece of kryptonite, you're not invested in it at that point just because of how jumpy it is, and like you don't really even care about the action at that point.
So for me, you know, I think these major themes that I liked, it's hard to find the heart of this movie. It's hard to find a heart in the movie, and I think
it added a lot.
I think it's a movie that I want to see again, but I'm probably going to hold off until maybe the rated R version comes out.
I'm kind of interested to see how that goes.
But it's there. The themes are there. I can see where they wanted to go with it. But again, I think most of this is whoever edited this, if Schneider was involved or whoever he hired, they should have been fired.
I just looked
and
it
never
up.
Hired to edit another movie ever again.
I just looked it up. The guy that was the editor was the same editor of Independence Day and actually won an Oscar for Born on the 4th of July for editing.
Really?
Yeah. This is not only from an Oscar-winning editor, but an Oscar-winning screenwriter.
All right, I have to assume there's studio fuckery with like how that was edited then.
We have nothing but Warner Bros. To blame for that.
Yeah, I can't imagine there's anything else. Like, if that they actually had a good editor for that, they had to be like, just cut it out as much as possible. This is going too long.
I find that hard to believe just because it's probably the worst editing movie I've ever
it's
been
up there.
In. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah.
It's,
like, I can't think of a
short of the
one.
Blair Witch Project with the shaky cameras.
You can look at films like Melancholia where it like has that distorted sense of time, and even that's a little easier to follow.
Yeah.
Like, than some of the bits in this. And, like, you get a rough idea what everything's doing, but you don't really care because it just...
Because by the time that the movie actually gets to the screen, there have been about 10 or 15 other cuts that have made it from, like, the first cut, which no one ever sees the rough cut.
Mm-hmm.
Then you whittle that down, you get, like, about maybe 3 or 4 cuts into the director's cut. And then the studios take a look at it, and they're like, well, this is what we want. And that could have been where a lot of the stuff happened.
I have to assume it is.
Something had to happen, because I just don't understand if you put the head to do test audiences, you would think, with this much writing on the movie, that they had to put it in front of the fans. And the fan, I
don't think they did.
The best thing I can think
they
is
really didn't.
Warner Brothers must have been like, we want this to be kind of a summer blockbuster. You can't have it going over 3 hours. Because that's a long, even by, like, Lord of the Rings standards.
Well, I get that, but there was no need to... They could have done this movie and made it a lot less choppy. At least transition, move a few things around, and probably made it a little bit more sense.
A little bit, but at the same time, you know, there's so much happening in this movie. You're trying to add, like, the entire Justice League setup.
Well, yeah.
Like, there's even, like, that flash scene, and then you have the dream sequences. There's a lot thrown in.
Well, the dream within the dream was too much, I'll agree. Yeah. But,
and that's why I say I think it's written with a shotgun, because they literally shot whatever
they
could.
To be honest, I see this film, and I feel like they probably would have... Almost were setting enough to do like a two-parter, like they did with like some of the other like say Mockingjay.
It did feel like that, and then all of a sudden it was like,
no,
it's
not
going to be a two-parter because we can't have two-parters back to back. So we're going to make it a one.
Yeah,
it was like, oh crap.
Yeah, we're going to do that with Justice League. You can't do that here. Just throw everything in.
Well, they had so much they had to do. They had to set up Justice League. They had to introduce Wonder Woman. They had to do hit all of these points, which I'm sure DC and Warner Brothers were saying, this is what we need.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they insisted on. I was like, no, we need to start our franchise from the get-go.
But,
go.
Because
in its defense, this is actually better than, like, Spider-Man.
But correct
like,
me
in terms of, like, how much it threw in.
Correct me.
Which Spider-Man, though?
The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Okay, like, that threw in more than this did.
But correct me if I'm wrong. Does DC not have a storyboard team like Marvel does?
I don't think they have the same amount of oversight now.
Yeah, and I think who they have on their staff for the comics is different than who they have for their like cinematic universe.
Yeah, their TV universe is different from the movie universe
and the comic universe. I get that, but I always thought that they were setting up similar to Marvel, where they had an entire team to help develop the entire cinematic
universe.
From
my understanding of it, that they're kind of letting the directors have a bit more leeway in terms of tones for individual films than Marvel is, which could be actually kind of a blessing later on.
Which works when you have talented directors, first of all.
I'm not against Snyder. Like, I liked his adaptation of Watchmen. I thought he did the best you could really do with that. But
Sucker Punch, Man of Steel, and...
I never saw
I actually didn't mind Man of Steel that bad.
I like Man of Steel.
Like, it's okay.
But that right there was like my first clue as to how I knew this was going to be a bad idea.
Well, yeah, he definitely takes like kind of the more Miller approach to like how the comics do it towards like the film adaptations.
And
like really, even if you look at Batman in this film, he's clearly going with Dark Knight Returns being one of the major references. You might have a little bit from like The Killing Joke or from was it Injustice or whatever that
you got
New
a
52
lot.
Run
but
was.
All right, well, you're groaning, John, so what worked and what didn't work for you?
you know, if you're referencing anything by, like, Frank Miller and New 52, then that's
there was some
exactly,
good stuff in New 52.
New 52 some, started out good.
Yeah,
but there's some good stuff, but the second they started, like, desaturating all the colors and, like, redoing backstories...
I think once you got around to the midpoint for New 52, it got kind of out there. Like, if you look at, like, the first Batman comics that came out in New 52 was, like, the Court of Owls storyline, and that was actually really cool. I'm not sure if you saw that one, but it was nice. And then a little bit after that, you got to like the Joker like cutting off his face thing, and that
the Joker
that
cutting off his face.
That was
they did
weird.
With the Teen Titans and just what they did to Blue Beetle.
I didn't see what they did with Blue Beetle.
Oh man, they completely destroyed everything they built up for the new Blue Beetle.
Really?
In the new 52. But going back on to what didn't work with this. I hate to say it, scene one was the moment I knew I was in for a rough ride in this movie. The second those bats start swirling around
like,
Bruce.
But it was a dream sequence. I actually thought it was cool.
Even out of a dream... Okay,
yeah.
That's the thing. Zack Snyder can't do dream sequence as well.
I thought it was really funny. I was like, oh, I'm so glad you said that was a dream sequence. That almost ruined it for me.
Well, yeah.
Because like, it has that same Christ-like imagery we were used to seeing them portray Superman with.
So now we're seeing every DC superhero getting the Jesus
essentially,
treatment.
He created the Trinity, and he's making them the gods of the DC universe.
But there's no way... Yeah. There's no way. I'm sorry. If you thought that was real, I don't see how you didn't, because the minute he started getting lifted up by the bats, I'm like, it has to be a dream sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
At the same time,
it's
like...
It's still a stupid visual.
Yes.
It's a stupid visual.
But he's the Batman Rising. That's about
the
movie's
going to
become.
But he's supposed to be broken in the theme, so thematically, none of the themes are working.
But that's the moment where he...
But he's not rising from anything in there. It's just... I
think it works.
Going on to dreams, and then every other dream sequence from that were...
The weird thing
is,
once you later on the dream sequences, it's hard to tell whether they're supposed to be, like, premonition-like dreams or, like, adaptations of his inner psyche, or... especially because you have that flash sequence where he's jumping on the portal, which I hate that scene, but... just because, like, there's something about Ezra Miller's voice that I just... I'm so used to the TV flash that throws me off.
Well, yeah, it's because it's Lex Luthor's voice.
Is it?
It's Michael Rosenbaum.
Okay.
Michael Rosenbaum voices
the
Flash.
No. He's talking about the actual, like, the Flash on the WB.
Oh, from the TV show, not like...
Yeah. On the CW.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the TV show, and, like, they have Ezra Miller, who's, like, from, like, Perks of Being a Wallflower sort of thing. I think he was in, what was, something about Kevin.
We need to talk about Kevin. It was his first movie, and then Perks of Being a Wallflower. He's been, like, the indie kid for a while.
There's something about his voice that just, it doesn't connect right away, so, I don't know, we'll see how that changes.
So what else? What else, John?
Sorry. Just the whole script. Like I said before, like, these... If I'm watching a movie about heroes, I want to see them do something heroic, or something that defines what their, you know, heroic nature is in the story. Like, if it's Batman, Batman is the force and the, you know, the justice force that does what the police can't do. You know, he's the detective. But Superman... That's why I hated Man of Steel, because never once in Man of Steel did he do anything that resembled Superman to me. And Zack Snyder has even gone on record and in interviews saying he doesn't like Superman as a character. And he's approaching Superman as an anti-Superman director, and frankly, that's kind of irking me. So, I mean, he's approaching it the way Frank Miller approaches Superman too, which, if it were up to Frank Miller would have Superman.
Well, that's why
he would basically turn him into Marv from Sin City and just go around liquefying everyone.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's... Well, even in Dark Knight Returns, he's like a tool of the state for
Frank
Miller's adaptation.
And again, that goes into, like, knowing what Frank Miller's career later on down the road turned out to be. I mean, that's why I can't get into, like, any of Frank Miller's past stuff.
In Miller's defense, there are other artists that went that direction with him. Like, Superman Red Sun went with a very similar thing. It was an alternate kind of universe thing, but it kind of went in the same direction.
But, yeah,
there's
yeah.
plenty of adaptations where Superman goes
rogue
or...
Yeah, or he goes tyrannical or, you know, dictator-like. Mm-hmm. And, I mean,
but
that's one of the things...
It's the themes that Miller embodies. Mm-hmm. Like, if we want to go into themes and elements and everything with the story... What Frank Miller does with his themes are... They just betray everything about the characters, to me. Like, when I read the Dark Knight Returns, I mean, I get that it made it grittier and it made it darker, and that's fine, I get it, I respect it for that, but there's just something about it that just didn't strike me as Batman.
Well, Miller's one of those artists who, a lot like some of the older Golden Age artists, who kind of, like, puts himself in the character a lot... And you kind of see his personality reflecting, like, the main antagonist.
Yeah, but after reading, like, All-Star Batman and Robin, seeing what he did to every other DC hero, I can't get into him.
Yeah.
I really can't. And seeing that kind of mentality on the screen again...
Well, I mean, I kind of view, like, Miller's Batman the same way as, like, some of the Golden Age ones. It's an interesting take on it. It's not a take for everyone.
Well, no, not. So, like, with the rest of the script... there's also so many things, like, there's something that writers are known about the idiot plot, in which if the character does something simple, do you still have a plot? Like, if before a fight, Superman just goes, like, when he's standing above the bat signal or whatever, he's like, Lex kidnapped my mother, has been manipulating us, so we fight. There's no fight. Or if Superman simply just, like, I mean... He can hear Lois Lane underwater, under a building, like, during a fight with Doomsday, but he can't hear a ticking bomb under a wheelchair. And just all these, like, suggestive things.
I don't know.
It's because he's connected to Lois. I mean...
Yeah, it's an emotional...
I mean, it's that deep emotional connection
with
the center of your world.
I never seen that. Like, Lois pretty much doesn't exist, and she has no reason... They've never defined the relationship between those two with these movies. I mean, you get that in the comics, and in here it's just implied.
Exactly. So why would you need to develop it in the movie?
Because it's a story, and they need it.
But to the same degree, you just said in the beginning that the opening sequence where we had to see you know, Wayne's die again, that's what killed it for you, because we've already seen it enough.
So we've already seen Lois enough
in the comics. Why do we need to see it again to know
that those two are the
you know, they're deeply in love.
But we don't see anything about their characters. That's the thing, is we don't...
I don't think there's time. There's so much to put into
it. They put in all the wrong stuff.
Well, I mean, you have to hit certain beats just to kind of move the story along, and I think that's pretty much all they kind of did.
Because
I mean, you look at the dialogue, and it's so choppy. Like, they clearly just like, all right, that's kind of essential, but just add that, because
they're just saying stuff to go to the next line or for the next trailer. And then, as far as, like, stuff that didn't need to be in there, Doomsday. Doomsday is an entire script.
To be honest,
it does not need to be a 5-minute
plot. Well, Grant, to be honest, you can make the argument this really would have worked out better as a two-parter, because then you could have added Doomsday, you could have added the Death of Superman story arc. Because the Death of Superman itself is its own story arc.
And frankly, it's a story arc that would fit into this generation. And if Zack Snyder, you know, knew anything about developing a character, the entire story arc of the Death of Superman was wondering whether Superman fits into that generation. I mean, the whole thing was about the fact that he was of an older generation that the newer one didn't idolize anymore, and he was still needed, and it was his ideals that saved people. And frankly, that was the kind of hero we needed in this movie.
Well, yeah, either that or you get something like Superman versus the Leagues, where you have like his take of justice versus a new generation's ideals.
Yeah, so instead we just get mopey Superman, who just is happy to levitate and allow, you know, the population of Mexico to outstretch their arms at him in, like, one of the dumbest visuals ever.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was okay.
There's a lot of reference of him being the savior.
Yeah,
they go so heavy into it that
it's just not the symbol. It's just like blatant hitting you
Superman
over the head.
Superman Returns was really bad about that too, though.
Oh no, excuse
like,
me.
And to be honest, any modern Superman take does it a little bit.
Well, basically, they were showing you two sides. They were showing you the people who
adored him and those who hated him.
Exactly. Yeah. They were just showing you both extremes.
That's kind of how I took it. I mean, maybe it's a simplistic view, but. All right, John, let me turn the tables on you for a second. So what did work for you? You got to have at least some positive. It wasn't that. I mean, it wasn't.
I'll always throw it out to the actors because, you know, I know Affleck wanted to do his best to redeem himself from Daredevil.
I think Affleck did really well in this, actually, personally.
Well, yeah, as I was saying, like, you know, he was trying to redeem himself from Daredevil, but, and then you also have, like, Gal Gadot, who, the second she was announced, she had, like, all these people on, like, online or on message boards and Twitter and everything saying, like, oh my god, her boobs are too small, or oh, she doesn't fit into this, and
yeah.
So, of course, she's got something to prove, too. I mean, and in some respects, you know, Jesse Eisenberg's trying to do something new, so, you know, I mean, I'll throw it out there for the actors that they're at least trying to do something. It's just the script that they're given and the direction that they were given is not there for them. Like, cause you have completely competent actors, a wonderful cast, and some of them even taking chances on a new take on a role, and they're just doing this in a movie that is not suited to what they're doing.
Okay,
so
that's fair. Aaron, what did not work, I guess I should say?
To be honest, for me, it's mainly the editing. There's some of the dialogue that's a little heavy-handed, which I think is true of Man of Steel a little bit as well. Right. And in this one, you have a few little plot holes, like throwing the kryptonite spear in the water and then taking it back, even though there's no real dialogue about it. And so there's little plot holes like that. Yeah. Maybe the editing, you know, the extended cut might deal with that a little bit. But I think you're still going to have some of the heavy-handed speeches and things like that through it. To be honest, I actually thought some of this worked out a lot better than I was expecting. Like, I was not expecting, like, Jesse Eisenberg's, like, Luthor. And I actually thought it was a really interesting take.
You liked that?
Yeah, I did. Okay. I think I might be in the minority about that, but...
Yeah.
I thought, like I said, it's admirable that he tried something new.
Well, I mean, like, especially because it's a complete departure from, like, the traditional Luthor. Like, it really is kind of the Mark Zuckerberg kind of Facebook entrepreneur kind of take on it.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, maybe makes him a little bit more manic, but at the same time, you look at, like, say, the Incredible Hulk, the first Iron Man, Ant-Man, they all kind of had that traditional Lex Luthor archetype, kind of bald venture capitalist kind of dude who's the villain. And I kind of feel like if they went with that route, it'd be just as forgettable as the villain in Ant-Man. And I thought it was a nice kind of departure for it.
In that respect, like 90% of Marvel movies' villains.
To an extent,
I don't know. That was one thing that... I mean, I wasn't going to talk about it, but I wasn't crazy about this version of Lex or Alex or whatever.
It's a complete departure from, you know, the traditional Lex Luthor. I understand that a lot of people found it annoying or didn't like the character.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I actually thought it was kind of an interesting take on it. And one of the funniest scenes in the film for me was that right before the Senate blows up, you see that little jar of Granny's peach tea. I thought that was kind of a funny bit. And for a movie where people constantly say it's too, you know, it doesn't have any humor in it, that was a funny line. Or, you know, just a funny little bit.
And on that scene, one thing I do want to add, and this is why I think Zack Snyder's a terrible director. The bomb under the wheelchair. There is a old adage by Alfred Hitchcock about how to build tension in the film. And that is, if there's a bomb under a character's chair, it's not scary until the audience knows it's there. Mm. When did we know it was there? Like, until it blew up.
I don't know.
So there's been no tension in that scene whatsoever.
But it's a bomb in the same room as Superman. Like, if you know it's there, then you give Superman a chance to deal with it.
I thought that was a better way of doing it.
Even if he's saying, like, in the later scene, I wasn't listening for it, or whatever.
But the suspension is when she looks at the tea. And she drinks it and she looks at it and that's what it's very quick build up. Well, whatever. That's when you know she knows something's wrong.
Well, so I think when you know something's wrong is when his assistant looks over.
She turns at it and she looks at the
Like there's a little bit there, but like it's just you're kind of playing off people's like emote or like facial and like body
language. Well, it was all about the senator there. Yeah. It was all about that that's what they were using. I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I actually thought that was a good scene. Like, I wasn't expecting the chair just to blow up the entire place. It was a nice kind of twist to it. Not in the, you know, M. Night Shyamalan what a twist sort of way.
Let's not go there tonight. Brian, you've been pretty quiet. What worked and what didn't work for you?
I liked the movie, so for the most part I liked, you know, the way the characters stayed true to themselves the entire way. They didn't vary back and forth. Some of the script was bad. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that you're hearing people talk about is just nitpicking stuff that's like, if it was in any other movie, they wouldn't even have noticed. But this one, I think, because you have, you know, Batman and Superman as such iconic characters.
Yeah, there's a lot of fanboyism to it.
Exactly. So, of course, they're going to nitpick at it. You know, it's DC's really, like, first go at almost, you know, three-quarters, you know, Justice League, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but the other thing is, like Aaron, I'm hoping for the extended edition kind of fills some of the holes up.
I honestly hope they do a complete re-edit. I don't know.
Well, either that, you know, it's either going to make way more sense, or it's just going to add way more and be more of a clusterfuck.
I don't know how you can make it any more jumpy, though, than it already is.
Yeah, I can't imagine it being that. Like, I'm looking at that as, like, they had to just cut so much out just to squeeze out, like, every minute they could to kind of cut down on time.
Honestly, if I find out they took out more plot points in that movie, it will be a giant clusterfuck, because there did not need to be any more plot points in that movie.
There are a few deleted scenes that have already leaked where you see, like, Luther with, like, in the, what is it, the little alien ship, and you have, like, a person from Apocalypse, like, in front of him.
Yeah. Okay, so more plot points.
Yeah, there's a few.
Great.
More. Plus, you supposedly Batgirl was in the film, but she got cut out as well.
God.
But I imagine there's so much in the dialogue that just it had to just been cut out in order for it to be so choppy.
I don't know. I'm with you. My hopes with the rated R version, the more I think about it, because it is so choppy. It looks like they were forced to put it into a specific time frame. And this is what we got.
Well, yeah, they're trying to make money off a summer blockbuster sort of film. They had to have been like, no, this is going too long for our fan base or for the main public.
We'll see.
My nitpicking is still screenwriting and characters.
So, well, yeah, but I mean, the editing kind of plays a role in that.
The editing was bad, too, but it's just like I can hear the dialogue and I can see like the lines typed out. I'm just like, what the hell were you thinking?
To be honest, I think with the dialogue, it's so hard to get into it, it just takes you out of it. And, like, if the editing was better, I think a lot of that would be a lot easier to overlook.
Yeah, I think so, too, because I really think it felt like a lot of the scenes were either chopped in half they chopped out the beginning
especially
or the end
scenes.
Or took out the middle part and tried to scrunch it back together. I don't know. There's a lot of scenes
with Eisenberg where I just feel like they had to cut like out a good chunk of that because you have no build-up. You just have straight to the...
Right to the whatever you want to call it.
What if it turned out it was just like, you know, three minutes of Eisenberg improvising?
I don't know, I might see where it goes.
Okay, so let's move on to was it true to characters? That'd be the next section of the podcast. You know what, Aaron, why don't you go first on this one?
It's true to certain adaptations. These are Golden Age characters. There's been many iterations throughout time. You have the Adam West version, which is actually pretty authentic to, you know, like the 1950s and 1940s adaptations of Golden and Silver Age. You have this that's actually pretty authentic to, say, like Frank Miller's, like The Dark Knight Returns, All-Star Superman, Injustice, and, you know, a few others where they try to take that, you know, kind of darker, kind of more, in some interpretations, realistic approach to it. You know, where you have kind of the beaten down Batman and Superman and them dealing with, you know, society and the world, and it does some of that well. And in its defense, like, those comics may not be everyone's favorites, but there's way worse choices they could have gone with, realistically. Like, you had, you know, a Superman where you had Superman Red and Blue, where Kryptonite divided him in two and they had different powers, and you had Man-Bat, and there's lots of weirder things you could have gone with that would have been way worse than the choices they made with this.
Superman versus Bat-Baby?
Yeah, something like that. Like, there's a lot of weird just one-offs in the comics, and there's lots of different interpretations. And there's certain comics this does actually mimic really well, and there's other ones where it, you know, the comics, you know, take a different turn with the characters and it doesn't. So it does well for the comics it is trying to, you know, replicate.
Okay, that's fair. That's very in depth too. Well done, Mr. Ankenbauer.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, Aaron. It stayed true to the comic it was trying to follow. I mean, plain and simple. It wasn't. It didn't like start off as, you know, super friends and end up with Teen Titans. You know, I mean, it didn't go
like, we're going to start off real happy and cheery, and then we're just going to bring it down.
Yeah, I mean, it stayed the same all the way through, the same kind of, you know, the darkness.
It kept it down all the way through.
You know, it had some moments.
Like,
the same kind of darkness all the way through. You know, there were a couple of humorous spots in it, like when Lois Lane goes into the office and she wants to go check something out, and she's like, I'll take, you know, first class or whatever. He's like, economy. Her coach, and she's like, how about economy, blah blah blah.
No.
You know, and they banter back and forth. Yeah,
there's some Jeremy Irons bits as Alfred where he does some, you know, funny little, you know, just sarcastic remarks.
Yeah, I mean, so a little bit of humor was in there. I would have been upset if they would have been they would have started out saying one thing and then by the end of the movie completely did something different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so when you say stay true to character, they did stay in the line. There was no flip flop of, you know,
it didn't change midway through,
right?
Other than the Martha scene.
Yeah.
Why did you use that name?
Sorry. Oh, couldn't help myself. Couldn't help myself. Go ahead.
It is kind of unintentionally funny, but it is a nice scene.
Sorry. Yeah. But, you know, like you mentioned, though, I really like this older, more I'm just going to kick some ass regardless of lives lost kind of Batman.
I've had it. Yeah.
Yeah. He's been doing it for so long. He's like, you know what?
Rules don't matter anymore.
I've tried to change people. I've tried to go this way, but now I'm just going to go this way.
Yep.
You know, speaking of the whole Martha thing, that it was almost like
a lot was cut.
It woke up Batman. Like he was in his zone where I'm just going to keep fighting. I'm fighting. This is my fight. You know, and then when he said Martha, it almost took him at like one of those nightmares that he has seen, you know, all the time. So he kind of just paused, like, why did you say that name?
He just goes through like a traumatic flashback.
Yeah, so it just gave just long.
That's what I feel like.
I think what you're describing is better than what they put in the movie, because none of that was in there.
No, that was all in there.
No, it was
okay.
Well, I think things were cut there because what happened was the transition was very quick. It seemed like in the movie. He went from, I'm going to kill you to I'm your best friend.
Does play your benefit. She actually explains out that scenario for me.
But I really think something got cut there because it was very abrupt. It was like the rest of the movie, abrupt change.
Yeah.
So you couldn't
become
emotional.
It doesn't have time for subtle transition.
You couldn't be emotionally invested
in it. Like, it really just cuts out a lot of the build-up.
Exactly. All right, John, was it true to character for you?
No. No, no, no. God, no. It wasn't. Just...
All right.
Is that five no's?
It's so many no's. I'm just... The whole thing to me... You know, I've said before about, like, how I feel about a Frank Miller approach to not just Batman, but Superman also. And this is exactly, like, when we talked about our hopes and fears, and I said that that was my fear, that it would be too Frank Miller-ish. It was completely Frank Miller-ish, and I just knew
it. Was probably better with Wonder Man, or with Wonder Woman, than Frank Miller would have been.
I don't know. Frank Miller would have spent, like, about... You know, 20 minutes, like, just idolizing her ass. And that was the problem for me. It was like, I came out of the movie, and it was just, it was joyless. It was hollow. There was nothing to any of these characters for me. Like, Batman, you know, fine. I mean, we've seen him kill people before in Tim Burton's Batman, or, you know, we've seen him... He'll break his one rule in The Dark Knight or Batman Begins, whichever. What gets me is his use of guns. Because he is a character that, yeah, like, he may have just said, fuck it, after all these years, and just doesn't mind killing to do whatever, but he never forgets how a gun makes him feel powerless. And there is so much ingrained in the character of Bruce Wayne and Batman that is just so...
Well, maybe it's just because he's older.
Gun, but...
You know what I mean? Like, he can't move as fast as he did before.
Oh, no, he's clearly moving fast in the scene where he's rescuing Martha.
His guns is his way to kind of balance out
a little
bit.
In the Miller adaptation, that's why you do see him transition to that. It is kind of a parable of aging and events and things like that.
But he's not aging. Like, we don't see him, like,
he's older, but, yeah, he's still amazingly...
But, no, he's not. Yeah, he's agile. He's, like, doing chin-ups, like...
Yeah, he does CrossFit.
Yeah, he's doing... There's nothing old or broken about this Batman. I mean, he is...
Well, mentally, anyway.
Mentally, yes, but that's because he's based off the Frank Miller character.
Well, I mean, this is also a universe where you do see Robin was killed off. You don't know what happens to Batgirl in this, because it doesn't imply she's there.
It implies... That's what I'm saying about all these scenes. Like, we see hints, but we never see anything that is defined, and that's what you need to do with a good script, regardless of what you're setting up.
Once again,
you're going to make these character choices, you have to define them.
That's fine, but I think that goes back to some of our points of editing.
Everything.
This probably would have been better as a two-part film.
This would have been better if it was just like, if you want to have Batman and Superman in the same film, approach it the way that it was done in the cartoon. Like, you know, you have them...
Well, which one? Because there's multiple...
The rivalry. More of a rivalry than... Is that what...
Not so much of a rivalry as it is just, like, if we're going to introduce these two characters and put them in the same universe together, which, oh, that's another thing. Apparently, Gotham and Metropolis are just across the river.
Yeah, that I didn't check. I agree with you there.
Is it true to the universe and characters?
Yeah,
no, it is not.
Well, I mean, it's always meant to be, like, the Chicago-New York kind of difference, and now they're just across
now
the
bay. Now they're the Twin Cities.
It's just another part of Manhattan.
Yeah, that part did actually kind of bother me. That's a weird plot twist for...
But enough on Batman, because we got a lot of Batman in this. As far as, like, what we have with Superman, he's a non-character in this movie. There's nothing about him at all that's complex or deep, or he has his moments where he just goes up to the mountains and sees his father, which, thank God, we got Kevin Costner as his father back again. He needed more advice from him. He shows up, saves Lois, goes to the Senate hearing, saves Lois again, and fights Superman. That's it. There's nothing heroic or inspiring about him in this movie. I want Zack Snyder away from Superman to make him a hero again.
I'm going to make a small argument. He saved the woman he loves. That's kind of a classic heroic tale. I mean, that's more or less Django Unchained's entire plot point.
But you don't have any good Django moments.
Okay.
I mean, you've got him, like, showing up and, like, shoving a warlord through a wall, who technically we never saw that warlord kill anyone, if you think about it.
But he's the head of a terrorist organization.
Everything is implied.
We're starting to argue in circles.
In this day and age, though, I mean, you see that kind of thing. Let's face it, he looked like the head of a terrorist organization. He's the Osama bin Laden.
But again, it's but it goes
like
into
a Boko Haram
thing.
Sort of thing.
But it goes into the profiling thing where, and again, yes, is Superman out there just killing? I mean,
well, they did kill Jimmy Olsen. There's that. That's one dude that got killed.
But that again, that also goes into that was killed by Lex Luthor's guy.
Yeah, but he didn't seem that upset about it. He's like, oh, okay, well, he was with the CIA. Shoot him. All right. Yeah, makes sense to me.
But yeah, just so much. I mean, there's ways that you can imply things and make it relevant to the story. This does not know how to do it. This did not imply anything well.
Okay. As for me, I thought... As far as being true to character, Superman, yes, I have to disagree with you, John. I think the Superman was a... Again, I think they were trying to use the broken bat as a theme, and that they were trying to use Superman as being the light, the savior figure, if you will, and he's the one that redeems Batman in the end. And I... As far as the Batman, the broken bat, it's... I like the twist. I've said it earlier in the podcast, and I know we've said it off podcast as well. I like the idea of a Batman who's been fighting crime for 20 plus years has
the more experience.
Looks
Batman.
Like he's gone up against the Joker and lost Robin. You know, someone who's emotionally broken, maybe not physically broken totally, but maybe isn't quite as fast as he used to be. You know, so. I don't know. To me, I thought the Superman savior character, to me, that's what Superman is. He's the, I've said it before, he's the light that, you know, we're all supposed to aspire to. He's the hope. Where the Batman, especially, you can go broken with him because he is the darker of the two characters to me.
Yeah, he's the daily grind in the streets.
Yeah,
the character.
Exactly. So I think that's what they were going for. However, the editing, again, the choppiness, it really, you get lost. And it's hard to see that, and you have to actually go back and think about it. And that I really should go see it again in the theaters, just this version, because I think the heart is there, and I think the theme is there. It's just it's buried and it gets lost in translation.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying though about like with Superman being the inspiration to him, I didn't get that at all when I saw it. But I think that's what this movie is. There's nothing going on to it that when people see it, they can. Get all of that out of it from seeing it because there's nothing there to be seen.
Well, it's too broken. You don't have time to think about it. You don't have time for your mind to wrap around anything because they've already moved on to something else, or it's too choppy. There's no transition. You're going from this to that, and then like the dream sequence within the dream sequence. Really stupid idea. I'm sorry.
It works for certain things. I'm not sure it worked great in those.
Batman v Superman Inception.
Yeah, it just that doesn't work. Not in this sense. No. Not for what they were trying to pull off.
I don't know, like the dream sequence out in the desert sort of thing. I thought that was kind of
like
nice.
I didn't even recognize that guy.
I hated the Flash scene.
I didn't really even realize that was the Flash.
Yeah, yeah, that's the Flash.
He looked like a guy in an Iron Man suit to me because it was just the way they did it. So to me, it was true to character for the most part. I like what they were going for. It just again, it's lost in translation. Okay, so that brings us to let's do quick fire round table questions. All right, favorite quotes. Brian, what was your favorite quote?
I guess I already talked about it. I like the whole back and forth between Lois and her boss, but I guess my other favorite line was Affleck's, "Well, I'm here." You know, he would stand next to the bat signal after Superman told him, if they turn it on, don't come.
Yeah.
And he turns it on, stand there, and all of a sudden Superman shows him. He's like, well, I'm here. You know, it was kind of funny.
That's cool. All right. John, favorite quote?
You know, actually, I'll give Jeremy Irons' Alfred a bone here. There are a few lines that he kept, like, you know, harping on Bruce Wayne about. It's like, oh, this is supposed to be for the Wayne Estates. That's not going to continue anytime soon.
Yeah. There won't be a next generation here.
Yeah,
In your dreams, Alfred.
Right. Yeah, it was some pretty funny
moments. It was kind of a snarky little sarcastic thing. It was nice.
It was nice. Aaron?
I kind of like Eisenberg's, the whole God doesn't come from above, or the devils don't come from above, sort of thing. Like that whole little monologue thing, I thought was kind of nice.
Twist on,
yeah, they come from below.
Yeah,
and they had that painting that was upside down.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was kind of a nice little bit.
Yeah, it's neat, nice little play of a theme. My favorite quote was obviously when Batman goes to save Martha, and Batman goes, "I'm a friend of your son's," and Martha's like, "I kind of figured by the cape." I thought that was pretty damn funny.
That was probably up there for me as well, but I knew it was yours, so I didn't say it.
Yeah,
you wanted to take it.
Yeah,
you already had dibs.
You started the notes, damn it.
Sorry, there's not a lot of comedy in here, at least not a lot. Actually make you chuckle. Actually made me chuckle.
It's
a little
not 35 minute Marvel style, which is actually probably every 30 seconds, but.
Even that's starting to wear thin lately.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to see if that's what they keep going with. They seem like they've been going with the same sort of thing film after film, and it works for them, but we'll see how for how long. That's a different thing, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Aaron, do you have any kind of favorite quote there?
Eisenberg.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
It's all good.
It's getting late. Okay, so favorite characters. Yeah, I'll go first on this. It's the easy one, but I'll take it anyway. Affleck. I think he exceeded my expectations. Awesome job as Batman, the Broken Bat. I've said enough about the Broken Bat in this podcast.
Yeah, they actually did a lot of really nice things with his costume too. Like, this is one of the first Batmans where you really see like the white of his eyes really well.
Well, this is the first Batman that's not like in the heavy armor either.
Yeah.
Batman. This is kind of more the
except the end.
Yeah, except for the end with the giant robot Batman. Armor. But other than that, this is
they had his like kind of speed down really well in this as well.
Yeah,
like, you really see him just kind of swoosh across the screen. Amazing.
What did
he
do? He swooshed.
Swooshed.
Squail.
But yeah, it was
squail.
Yeah, it had to come up. I did like how they used the grappling hooks.
Yeah,
he used
that really well.
I hadn't seen that since '89 Batman, so that was kind of.
I don't know. Like, to be honest, I thought it actually used it a little better. Like, it used it almost as well as like the animated series using the grappling.
Yeah,
hooks.
Like you used to. Yeah.
I missed that. I always try to wonder if you can get like actually something in between your two fingers.
It actually have something.
It kind of hurts after a while if you ever try to hold something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, Eichenbauer.
Mine was a toss-up between Superman and Batman. I mean, obviously, they were both the main people in the movie.
Right.
I really like Cavill's Superman. But I would say Affleck, because of the way his Batman, Bruce Wayne switchover, actually, he felt like two different characters.
He does both parts really well.
He did it really well. And there was, and you could definitely see how no one in the public would ever realize he was the Batman.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? His personality,
Wayne,
it was really really good.
Okay, John,
you know, I think I think what Affleck brings to the character of Batman has got so much promise for it that when I read rumors that they're going to do a standalone Batman film and actually have Affleck direct it, I got excited because I think that's exactly what needs to happen because he owned the role, like you said, of Bruce Wayne, of Batman, and yeah, I would love to see him like an actually good director.
Well, he actually worked with Geoff Johns on the script too. Kevin Smith confirmed that.
Well, yeah,
so that'd
but
be awesome.
I mean, Affleck's got a couple directing belt or you know roles under his belt, and he seems like he's done rather well with them.
Yeah, you got a best
that.
Picture for
yeah.
it, so and
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, The Town was like it's a very intense film, so he can direct action sequence as well, and you know, so yeah, I mean. Getting it away from Zack Snyder and having Ben Affleck take it, I think he can do that character like a really good justice.
Yeah,
for that.
Cool.
But what's funny is Geoff Johns is also part of the New 52. So it may go from Frank Miller to the New 52. just to give you that bright side of hope.
No,
there.
No.
In the New 52's defense, again, I really like the Court of Owls storyline. I like the Damian Wayne's integration of Robin. That's a personal opinion, though.
Yeah, there are some good things that New 52 did, but for the fact, just like the mentality they had behind why they did it.
Certain comics they did better than others. Like I love their run of Captain Atom, even though it was really short.
All right, Aaron, what about you?
Well, I think all of us are kind of going on Affleck's Batman. I thought Jesse Eisenberg's Luther was really good, you know, departure as well. to be honest, I kind of expecting them to transition him into like a Brainiac character since he merged with the like one.
And he said, "Show me all the show me all your information."
Yeah, I feel like it actually integrated like the information into him. And Brainiac is actually the computer that runs the ship and all the computers on. So I feel like they're going to transition Alex Luthor into like a variant of Brainiac in one of the future films. And I think that'd be kind of an interesting kind of take on
A nice twist.
Yeah, like it's a current, you know, just little personal theory, but I feel like they set it up to where they could do that really well.
Yeah, cool. Very cool. All right, so let's favorite moments. Brian?
Well, obviously the bat and suit fight at the end. I'll go like that one. A lot of action in that. My next closest would be Batman going in to the warehouse to save, you know, Superman's mom.
Yeah.
That was just amazing, just to watch him go through all that.
Go crazy like
that. Yeah, and it was just awesome.
That's actually mine, but yeah.
Yeah, that was just awesome.
Aaron?
Well, the fight scenes were great. We also saw Amy Adams in a bathtub. Yeah. Not really a reason for it, but I liked it.
Oh, yeah.
So that was nice. So, yeah, I liked the action in that scene, so.
Okay.
It's cool.
Cool. John?
You know, it's funny, like, I think the most enjoyment I got out of this is, like, when the movie tried to be serious, it just came across so hilarious. Like, the bats lifting him out of the cave, like, I just started laughing to myself, or when I hear, "Why did you say that name?" Or just any of those moments. It's like watching Showgirls of a Room. Like, it just, it's, for me, it was just like, it was so badly done that I just started laughing. So, those would be my favorite moments.
Okay. I, you know, really, I guess the scene at the end after Superman dies, I guess, is kind of interesting from a visual perspective. It's very, it's obviously, to me, it looked just like the painting of taking Christ down off the cross kind of thing, so... Obviously, that's what they were going for.
Well, they do that a lot with Superman, and they even extended that to Batman in this film a little.
Well, yeah, Batman's kind of like the... I hate to say, he's kind of like the Roman who crucified Christ and only kind of standing there, you know, kind of thing. But, so, yeah, that was a very interesting visual scene. I don't know if I necessarily agreed with it, but you could definitely see what they were going for there.
Yeah, it's definitely a gods and monsters sort of approach to visually.
Yeah, my friend Sarah, who I went with the movie with, she even said she thought she saw, like, two other, like, rough crosses in the background.
Well, yeah, you see that in the Batman dream sequence as well, where he's the center person, like, tied up, and there's two people that get killed inside of him.
Right, so there's a lot of
There's a
visual,
very crucifixion sort of thing.
They're really going, they're going.
Yeah, so, it uses, like, the symbolism really, like, really heavily.
Like I said, I'm not sure if I'm crazy about it, but nevertheless, it is very visually interesting, so... All right, guys. Well, I think we have definitely dissected this thing pretty well. So let's just get into final thoughts and grades. All right, John, I'll let you give the first final thought and grade, sir.
Batman v Superman, see me after class. No, I give this movie a D. Like I said before, my fears of it being too Frank Miller-ish were confirmed. The whole dark means more mature is like the new attitude in the DC comics. When it wasn't more mature to me. Nothing about it was mature. It's just like it was dark for the sake of being dark. I mean, it felt like those goth kids. That had no direction or any reason to be goths, but they just dark. It was just, I came out of it and it was just like, it was hollow, it was soulless, and the moment that sold it for me was like when we have like the moment when Doomsday kills Superman at the end. I mean, it's supposed to be a big moment. I mean, this is supposed to be a character that is... like, it's supposed to matter, and I'm watching the funeral and everything, and nothing's resonating with me, so yeah, it just felt, I mean, that was the moment at the end, I was like, this was just such a hollow, empty movie. But if I do have to say one good thing about it, it's not the worst movie I've seen this year, so I'll give it that.
Okay, that's fair. Mr. Enkenbauer, your final thought and grade, sir.
I'm going to give it a B.
Okay.
The movie entertained me. I enjoyed it. And yes, it felt choppy, but was that because it was a comic to real life screen version, you know, somebody's vision? Or was it, you know, because scenes got cut out that made it choppy? The only real negative thing I had I wanted to mention was the cameos by the Justice League members. I didn't care for them at all. Yeah, they were brief, but we see the Flash going on a milk run.
Well, I mean, he's got to eat, man. He uses a lot of calories.
It was just so stupid. Aquaman looked like he had a hard time swimming through his own hair. I mean, it was just they were horrible.
It's just a L'Oreal commercial.
Which, yeah, it was bad. So I didn't care for those. But other than that, I liked the movie, and I'm looking forward to the next ones.
Yeah, we did talk about it in the last podcast that we were worried that like all these characters they were bringing in were just going to be cameos, and that's exactly what happened.
I actually wasn't that mad about the cameos. Like, I wasn't that fond of the Cyborg one because you don't really get to see that much of it. But I actually thought the Wonder Woman one was like a nice little setup to like the next film. And you just see that kind of 1980s.
The Wonder Woman was the best, but the Cyborg one was the worst.
Yeah, that felt like a web series.
Yeah, it almost looked that way.
Now,
yeah.
I do have a question I wanted to throw out there before you guys get the rest of your. All right. From the Vision that we see, the one that scene that we didn't like, and the way that they died in the beginning, Bruce's parents died in the beginning. Do we think that Flash's standalone movie is going to be Flashpoint?
I don't know.
Because they made such a big deal about...
I can't imagine about, it being...
About, what was it, Jeffrey Dean, right? Who's the guy who plays his father?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan?
Yeah. They made such a big deal about him being Bruce Wayne's dad that...
Oh, right.
So that he, you know, if they did Flashpoint and he becomes Batman, essentially Batman and then Flashpoint, and some of the stuff was, you know...
Like, they're going to create an alternate universe kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Maybe. It's possible, but to be honest, it would be longer than the movie to set that up. Because not only would you be using the film to introduce the Flash character and his abilities and maybe some of his, like, lower nemesis, but that's just, like, a big arc to put in for, like, a 2 to 3 hour film.
Not really. I mean, there's the animated Flashpoint.
Yeah.
That's what they did in that one.
Well, yeah, but I think...
And that fit.
Well, yeah, but...
You don't take the time to, like, actually introduce the character in that. Like, you really kind of just jump into the main storyline, and I don't know...
Well, maybe that's what they're going to... You know, maybe that's what they're going to do.
It's possible, but
Maybe they won't show origins of Barry Allen or anything.
It'd be nice, but I don't... I'm not sure if they will or not.
Well, we've seen how they like to imply stuff with this movie, so they could cut a lot out and just say, there you go.
In its defense, like, we do go through the origins of, like, every single superhero one. Like, it's okay to skip it from time to time.
Yeah, but that was just...
With Batman.
That was what I was wondering. And
Superman.
I mean, just to add to that for a second, I could see that, but it would have to be like after Justice League if they did it, in my opinion. If they were going to do an alternate universe kind of thing.
Like, you don't want to have like build up and
right.
Then
you'd want to do
like,
it
cut
like,
it midway through.
Yeah, you'd want to do it like after you do the big Justice League movie and then maybe introduce an alternate universe, an alternate timeline kind of thing. Otherwise, you're just going to confuse people.
Well, they're already going
to
do that.
No, yeah.
It's kind of like...
I think people are already confused.
Kind of like
Star Wars.
Exactly. But where's Rey?
Yeah.
You know, and that was my daughter's first reaction to that.
We don't want...
Where's Rey?
You guys are always big about me bringing up Star Wars. You guys did it, not me.
I did. So. We did. Because we're talking about how confusing things are.
Well, I brought up the squeals before anybody else brought this up.
All right. So just for the record. All right, my final thought and grade. I'll give it a C. You know, the editing... And probably the direction, I'm not sure, killed this movie. Even the self-sacrificing Superman scene, like where I was just talking about, was kind of lost to it. I don't know. I really do believe if it was re-edited, I think it could work. I like I said, I'm very sad to hear that the WB was scaling back or delaying their releases going forward because of it, because of this one movie. Even though I said in Hopes and Fears, I said, yeah, that this could happen. But hopefully they're going to give it another chance. Hopefully they're not going to completely pull the plug.
No, they're not.
They're pulling it on the non-DC movies.
Yeah, so... What
so they're scaling back, like, on the Harry Potter film sort of thing?
Yeah. Well, no, the Harry Potter's their bread and butter.
So. Yeah, they're scaling back on the multiple big movies coming out at the same time. Like, what was the other one? The C one?
Which one? You know, the fact that their last three movies before this one were Jupiter Ascending, Pan, and In the Heart of the Sea.
In the Heart of the Sea, yeah.
Yeah, they were all like $150 million movies that made like
Yeah,
20 million.
So they were saying they're going to the scale back was that they're going to do less of those movies to focus more on the other ones.
Because they were reporting that in order for this to be considered like successful, it has to gross $1 billion.
It's
going to
do that.
From what some people are saying, like it's going to struggle to get to $1 billion because it started out at like 480 in its first week.
It's already
700, but that's like slowing down afterwards, and the giant percentage drops weekend weren't just here. I mean, it went from being number one in China to being number four.
Well,
like it's been plummeting worldwide.
I think it probably by the time if they put it out for 3 months, like they did with Star Wars, or even longer, I think they'll hit it. But it might take it a while.
But that's what they're scaling back on is like their non DC and non Harry Potter films, but. The other thing that's funny to mention is like they're actually spending millions of dollars right now to do reshoots on Suicide Squad because apparently it wasn't funny enough.
Yeah.
So they're going back to add jokes.
I think that sounds horrible.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Because Suicide Squad, like I understand like this is one of those things that stories that makes me think WB and DC are being kind of reactionary.
Which is exactly what I thought when they said they were releasing the R-rated cut of everything they're doing is reactionary.
Well, they also said there would be more Batman in it than we thought originally, too.
I don't know, like, Suicide Squad doesn't really have to be a funny movie. It can be a dark film, and that's fine, so... Right. I don't know.
But, anyway, getting back to the final thought, I want the DC universe to thrive. I think it potentially has the best stories to tell. It has... And I know I'm going to catch a lot of flack for saying this. But it has the more iconic characters. It has the more popular characters.
Yep.
You know, what did you and I and everybody else, you know, run around in their underoos in? It was Batman. It was Superman. And it was Spider-Man from
Marvel. Spider-Man.
But those are pretty much your big three. Yeah. And DC has two. So there's lots of stories to tell. And I really want to see those stories told. And I want to see them told right. So, so that's pretty much... Just kind of like, just my final thought, great, I guess. So, but maybe they should think about maybe changing directors going forward. I will say that. I'll admit, if it truly is, if this is what Snyder really wanted, then I'd say absolutely change directors. So, Aaron, final thought, great.
I'd probably give the grade like a C. Like I think the editing really just kills the immersion for this for me. I'm kind of waiting out to see how the extended cut does in terms of like how I kind of view it. Even then, I think it's going to be kind of a flawed movie to enjoy. There's going to be some heavy-handed dialogue. There's going to be some plot holes and some little things that are kind of, you know, you kind of have to overlook. At the same time, though, like the editing is the worst part, and I really feel like the extended cut has a real good opportunity to kind of fix that. And hopefully it does. Like everyone says, we want to see, you know, the DC, you know, movie universe do well. I'd love to see, like, kind of a grand Green Lantern universe kind of be built up in the, you know, DC films or even on back on TV or whatever. So hopefully it does well, and I'm really kind of hoping, you know, the re-edit does a lot better.
Fair enough. Okay, so where can you find Porn Midwest Guys? Well, brand new, we now have a YouTube channel out there, and I have tested it out, and if you do type in the number 4 Midwest Guys, you can find our channel that way with a limited number of podcasts. This one will be included. We're going to try to put them all on going forward. Obviously you can find us on iTunes, same thing, type in the number 4 Midwest Guys. We're also on Stitcher, OneCast, just about any other
wherever you found us to listen to us this time. This time is there too.
Also, feel free to review, send in questions, rate us, share, all
definitely
that fun
share.
Stuff.
That's
just
a big thing.
Make them all awesome, please. Also,
or bad, just whatever.
No bad. Awesome. So
or call me an asshole.
All right, asshole. No, I'm kidding.
You for calling it bad.
I know. Apparently, yeah. Just see what they do on message boards. They call me a Marvel fanboy.
Hey, I have been permanently kicked off the Force.net message board. But anyway, that's the point. Lifetime band, even. And they told me George Lucas hated me. You believe that? Anyway, all right. So you can find us on all these apps. If we're not on an online platform of some kind that you use, send me a tweet, send us an email. Speaking of tweets, we are continuing Twitter Quest 2016. How are we doing, Mr. Brian Eckenbauer?
Yeah, we're over 900 on the main one.
Mm-hmm.
And over 900. I'm over 2,000 on mine.
Woo.
So you know, send in your questions and stuff to Twitter. I'll respond back as soon as I can.
Yep, and you can reach us at number 4 Midwest Guys. Ankenbauer, where can they find you, sir?
It's at Ankzone, A-N-K-Z-O-N-E.
Copy, and you can reach me at bwilly1977 as well. Also, you can reach us on facebook.com/the4MidwestGuys, and you can even reach out to us on through good old-fashioned email. It is becoming kind of old-fashioned, isn't it? Anyway, the number 4 Midwest Guys at gmail.com. I remember when snail mail was.
Or you can write us a letter, and you can send it to. Oh, I better write
an address. Yeah, no address for that. Sorry.
I think that's how you get swatted.
P.O. Box.
P.O. Box them. All right. So, Mr. Brian Ankenbauer, thanks for joining us, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Johnny, thanks for just joining us as always.
Thanks for putting up with me.
No problem. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, not a problem.
And for myself, Sam B. Willie saying, up, up, and away!